All right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Coming up today, we have a really good episode. We have an interview with the legendary Mike Flowers, who is best known for the cover of Wonderwall that you all should remember from back in 1995. So I was really pleased to speak to Mike. It's a really interesting discussion and I hope you guys enjoy it. And as well as that, we're going to be continuing our Oasis A to Z, and we are up to A Quick Peep. So not the most auspicious of tracks. I don't think we're going to be spending ages on it. Next time around, we've got Acquiesce, which we probably will be spending a bit more time on. But hey, there you go. It is what it is. We've also got the news, and we've got some stuff from the various Oasis podcast listeners. So we will crack on with that. And I suppose the biggest news in the world of the Gallagher brothers this week has unfortunately been the Twitter spats. So I don't really like covering this stuff. I just find it a bit uncomfortable. I love all the banter. I love like Noel and Liam taking their mick out of each other, Parker Monkey, and I saw like an eagle, you're a common pigeon, and all that stuff. I love it. Like the banter between the brothers was one of the major factors of why we loved Oasis back in the day, and why we've continued to follow it. And it's entertaining and it's great fun. And we always moan about how modern pop stars aren't cool and they're too polished, and you just wish they would be a bit more controversial and stuff. So we love all this stuff. We love all the banter. However, when it gets into family, it makes me feel uncomfortable and I don't like it. So you probably see I regularly kind of retweet and comment and like things that Liam says on Twitter. But then when he gets into the stuff about Noel's family, his wife, Sarah, I just don't like it. I kind of tend to step away at that point. And the impact as well, often you'll then get people jumping in and sort of agreeing with Liam and having a go at Sarah, having a go at Noel. And you get people coming back again and sort of having a go at Liam for doing it, and the fact that Liam doing it can be seen as saying it's okay that people attack, the likes of Anaïs on social media and things. So, and it's just not good. It's just not cool. It makes me uncomfortable and I don't like it. So I don't really want to give it the oxygen of publicity here, but as it's Oasis news, I've got to cover it. I put a tweet out there and said, look, do you want me to cover this or not? And the general consensus was, yeah, we do need to cover it. So let's just do a quick callback to where this kind of came from. So obviously they've been warring since they were kids and stuff, but we're not going to go back that far. In this latest kind of back and forth, and particularly as it relates to social media and Noel's kids, is really, I suppose, from the fact that Liam had kind of regularly attacked Noel and occasionally sort of mentioned about Sarah as well on social media. And then back on the Front Row BBC documentary that Noel did.
He was on this programme a few weeks ago and he said...
Really? That was exciting, wasn't it?
Yeah, people seem to like it. And he said, but he said how much he missed you, how much he missed Oasis.
Oh, really?
He did.
Oh, really? Well, maybe he should stop tweeting about it then, shouldn't he?
What do you make of all this? How do you feel about it all now? Is it a soap opera you can push away, or do you want to get involved?
No. I think probably the nation as a whole, particularly the media, would love me to get a Twitter account. Social media is exhausting, and it shines a light on it shines a light on things that I find quite distasteful. And my wife is on social media and my kids are on social media and people come after them on social media. And it's not very nice.
It's ugly, actually. It indicates an ugly thing in the world.
It is ugly. My wife has showed me things that people have written about her, and it's disgraceful. My daughter has shown me things that people have written about her in regards to Oasis. That's disgraceful. And it only heightens my resolve that I'll never walk the stage with that band again for that reason. There's many reasons. There's loads of reasons. But it used to be professional, right? Professional reasons, like, I don't want to do it. I did it. Why taint the legacy? But now it's personal, you know. And
well, because you think the way people will respond and now have a platform.
People are coming after my family.
And that's stopping you.
And one particular person has legitimised it. And for that reason, you've seen the last of Oasis.
And then, so Liam came back on Twitter with a couple of comments about that, basically saying he wasn't bothered. And then the big thing that's really then riled Liam recently is Sarah on her Instagram. So this is Sarah McDonald Knowles' wife, then called Liam a deplorable wanker. And she said, please God, have dropped dead by the time my kids are on social media. And so, obviously her two kids being the two boys, Donovan and Sonny. And then, Liam didn't then respond very kindly to being told to drop dead. He said, think it's time to address the witch. You want me to drop dead, you have a screw loose and the world knows as you were. She's the reason Oasis is no longer. Have to put it out there, she's dark. We were about to go on tour to USA, she robbed Noel's passport, fucked with his head for a week. He come crying at my door. She's proper dark. Him and her are like Fred and Mary West, wishing people get AIDS and drop dead, as you were Oasis for life. My mum's got your number, darling. It's not hard to forget. 666, as you were. So as I say, not pleasant. I don't like it. I don't really want to report it. But that's it. That's what's going on in that world. In more pleasant social media news, it appears that Noel may be on Twitter. There's an account called @DemScissors, DemScissors, and it feels pretty much like it's Noel that's doing it. The style of writing seems to be very much like his old tour blogs and his current kind of Instagram updates. So, yeah, it feels like it. It's quite funny. It's sort of a lot of sort of scissor-based puns and stuff, which is quite funny if you're into that sort of thing. And I had some interaction with it. I sort of commented and said, right, I'm going to change my name to the DemScissors podcast. And I did. I changed it on Twitter briefly. The DemScissors account replied to me and said, you are very welcome, ... to pay me royalties, which feels like a very Noel Gallagher joke, seeing as I blatantly use the Oasis name, logo, and music in the podcast without paying any sort of royalties to Oasis. So, that feels like a kind of little nod towards the fact that we're kind of ripping off Oasis with the podcast. But it's also a bit ironic, seeing as Noel Gallagher himself famously rips other people off. So we'll see. I mean, who knows? It might not even be Noel doing the account. The one thing it does feel that like it is actually someone who's out there with them. So it might be Noel's mate Scully. Could be someone else from the band. We don't know. But because it's basically pictures of these scissors being taken all around the place. So feels like Noel, but who knows? Might not be. Right, anyway, into some proper news now, not social media silliness. Noel and Liam have still been touring. Noel's carried on throughout America, and if you stay on Instagram and watch the videos and photos that YZ and Jess, and there's a couple of photographers out with them, like I think it's @selfieguide Shaz, who's been out there and doing loads of photos and stuff. It's been really, really amazing backstage shots. They look like they're really having a great time out there. So fair play to them. And also Liam. Liam's still on tour. He's been killing it all across Europe. Been doing, playing great gigs in Zurich and Paris and Italy and yeah, tearing it up. So the guys are doing great. And also Ride. Ride are over in Asia. They played in Seoul and in China and stuff. And so, yeah, it's really cool to have all the Oasis guys out there. Oh, and Bonehead's been out with Liam as well on this sort of this stint of the European tour. He's been out playing with Liam on a few tracks. So that's been really good to see as well. So I asked for some reviews of the gigs, and Patrick Walker has stepped up to the plate. So over to you, Patrick.
Hey, JC, this is Patrick Walker from Cleveland, Ohio. I just want to give you my review from the Akron show, buddy. This was my third time seeing the High Flying Birds. The first time was in 2012 in Columbus, Ohio. The second was 2016 in Cleveland, Ohio. And this third time in Akron. And it's gotten better ever since. Noel seemed to be just in his element, like way more relaxed this time around. He's got this entire band with him now, obviously, with the saxophones and trombones, and he's got the girls there with the backup vocals and scissors and tambourines, and Gem and Chris there, you know, Oasis members playing with him. So that all was just amazing, just incredible. And I'm probably going to use the word amazing a lot, because it's going to be taking away from me swearing, because I don't want to swear like a whole bunch on this. But all in all, this gig in Akron was just totally biblical. I compared myself to like going to church. I actually was talking to Brian Garcia through Facebook Messenger before the show, and I said, "Hey Brian, I'm on my way to church. I'm going to see God himself." And he just laughed and he said, "Put in a good word with the man upstairs for me," meaning Noel, obviously. So shout out to Brian, man. We've been friends online for like 5 years. I can't wait to actually meet the guy in person. He's a saint. He really is. So I've been kind of a critic of the new stuff on the new album, and the album doesn't do them justice, but to hear them in person live was mind-blowing. They're far better in person than on the album. I mean, by far, tenfold. It's a big difference. Dead in the Water, when I first heard that, it blew me away, because that's classic Noel. Just stripped down, acoustic guitar, some piano, and just Noel at his best. And to hear that live, I literally was tearing up, because it was just overwhelming. To finally hear that in person was just mind-numbing. It was magic. Don't walk away. Also, shout out to YC. I had a brief conversation with her on Instagram, and I asked her after that, I think it was the Toronto show, I said, "Hey, put in a good word with Noel and play Let the Lord Shine a Light on Me." So when they played that in Akron, I mean, oh my God, that was just, it was like heavenly, man. It touched me in the deepest sense of the word, touched my soul. She is just incredible. With the element she brings to the songs that she's in, it's amazing. As does Jessica and Charlotte. They're both, all three of the girls are incredible. To hear Wonderwall, that's one of the first songs that I ever heard, you know, of Oasis. Obviously, being in the States, that's one of our go-to songs, but I've never heard it live. And to hear it live with Jessica on those backup vocals and just the whole band playing it, I've heard all the stripped down versions of Noel on acoustic and all that, which is, they're great, but to hear it the way it was meant to be heard originally was wonderful. Obviously, the classics, Half the World Away, Little by Little, Don't Look Back in Anger. You can never go wrong with those. When he played Riverman, was totally awesome. The Ballad of Mighty Eyes, one of my favorite songs on all, all the Noel content out there. That's one of my favorites. So that was just incredible to hear live as well. So like I said, man, it was just a great gig, and to see the Chief in person is always fun. I was six rows from the front. It was the closest I'd ever been, and it was just amazing. Also, hey, I forgot to mention, when they played Go Let It Out, oh my God, I mean, the place was going absolutely crazy. I mean, to hear Noel sing a song that was typically a Liam sung song was just absolutely insane. And everyone seemed to just jump up and go crazy. I mean, I was going nuts the entire time, so I don't really know what everybody else behind me was doing. I'm sure they weren't too excited with how much I was jumping around and going absolutely crazy. But man, to hear that sung by Noel was awesome. There was so much energy in the room. I can't even explain it to you without, someone actually seeing it and being there was just, oh man, it was great. Yeah, all in all, great show. And when they finished it off with a Beatles cover, I mean, come on, how could you go wrong? Especially that song, because it was played by, before with Noel and Paul Weller back in the day. So, to hear a Beatles cover by Noel, it was just great, because anything done by the Beatles is untouchable, and the only one that can really touch it is Liam and Noel, so that was incredible as well. Shout out to Talk Tonight 27, Sandra and Blue Dot Verena on Instagram. Those two ladies, I met them, I ran into them a couple times at the gig, and they're both lovely. I don't know if you guys know, I mean, I'm sure you guys follow all the pictures, but those two are at almost every gig. They go all over the world, and their pictures and their moments with Noel and the band is something to be jealous of. It's just incredible, the experience that those two have had. I look forward to seeing some more pictures from them the next couple gigs. I know they were heading to Chicago and Indianapolis, and I'm sure they're going to hit the entire rest of the United States as they always do. But shout out to my man Brian down there in Texas. He's my favorite Texan. I can't wait to meet you, my friend. JC, keep the podcast going, man. This is a great podcast. I love it. It's something I think we've all been like wanting to hear, just never knew about, how we could do it. But to hear all the people talk about Oasis and Noel and Liam and just the whole Oasis vibe is just wonderful. So keep it up, brother. Another thing, Liam, man, I can't wait. I hope Liam comes back to the States, because he did a very limited run, and I hope he comes back, because his album is just, it blows me away. I love it. I can't get enough. I listen to all the clips and all the gigs he's been putting out. Like that one he did at Radio X was just totally stripped down, and it was really great to hear him like that. So yeah, man, do with this what you will. I look forward to hearing it on the podcast, hopefully, and take it easy, brother.
So, well done, Patrick. Thanks very much, man, for doing that. That's brilliant. Let's move on to this interview with Mike Flowers. So after this brief musical interlude, it will be me talking to Mike.
Shiny, shiny, shiny boots of leather. Whiplash girl child in the dark. Comes in bells, your servant, don't forsake him. Strike a mistress and cure his heart. I'm tired, I am weary, and I could sleep for a thousand years. A thousand dreams that would awake me with different kinds.
Hi, is that Mike?
Oh, hi, James.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, not so bad, yes. Is that quite clear?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. That sounds fine. I think it should be all right. So yeah, we're okay. We're okay. Thank you very much for agreeing to have a chat. Much appreciated.
No problem.
No worries. So the idea is, so this is the Oasis podcast where I, well, it was going to be kind of more of a nostalgia fest and looking into kind of, you know, the history of the band and Britpop and everything around it. But then obviously with all the big changes with Liam coming back and everything, it's sort of changed a bit and ended up being much more news kind of based. But yeah, we're still going back and kind of speaking to people that were involved at the time or, yeah.
It's all news to me. I didn't know anyone had been away or come back.
Oh, really? Oh, no, Liam, have you not... No. Liam came back with a new album this year.
Giving away the enemy at the local railway station, I know nothing.
Okay, fair enough.
Music, slightly more than I did in 1994 or whatever, maybe. But, less, obviously, less.
Less. No, fair play. I
was already drifting away, hence... the act in a way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's just sort of take it from there, really. I mean, so you were obviously for our listeners, you'll be best known for your, you know, cover of Wonderwall, which was just a phenomenon at the time, and you know, and I still remember to this day actually hearing it on Chris Evans, you know, because he'd made it record of the week, maybe this is just my memory playing tricks with me, but I think he said, you know, Wonderwall isn't an original Noel Gallagher song. Here's the original version. Is that...
Yeah, I think he did, yeah.
Is that what you remember it to be?
Yes, well, I didn't know he was going to say that.
Yeah.
I remember being, I think I was asked to tune in by Kevin Greening, I think.
Yeah.
Because he originally picked it up. And then Chris Evans heard it and then played it. So I think Kevin Greening got in touch. He was very supportive. He got in touch to say, I'll listen to Chris Evans. So I was quite surprised when he said that, but it was quite appropriate as well.
Well, it was great because, you know, it was sort of a brilliant hoax, really, because the... You know, it's got the sort of the surface noise of it, so it sounds like it's an old vinyl and it's mono, and it's just such a perfect, you know, the fact that it's restructured so well. I mean, I loved it at the time and I still love it, you know, now as a piece to go back and actually think, you know, you've not just sort of covered it in that version, you've changed the chords, you've changed the structure of the song, you've moved it around, and it's a fantastic piece of work, Mike. You know, looking back on it.
Whatever, basically do whatever serves my purposes. And again, at the time, without any sort of consideration of what's legal or not legal or whatever, because there was no profile really, except locally, you know, in the clubs we were playing. So there was no thought of, oh, are we meant to do this or whatever. Just, you know, we just did it, used it as found material for our art.
That be the word on the street, that the fire in your heart is out. I'm sure you've heard it before, but you've never really had it.
Had you been doing? I know you'd been doing you've been playing gigs on the circuit and these sort of clubs, and then Kevin Greening had come along and sort of seen that and had suggested you cover modern tracks.
Yeah, so. Well, I think he gave us some CDs. He gave me a few ideas or suggested a few things. I'd heard of Oasis and things a bit at the time. Also, they were sort of big, but not as big as they became the year or so after that.
Yeah,
and everything. So let's say 94, was it 94? Oh no, it was mid-95, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't think they have quite kind of peaked in a way.
Yeah.
Until the country life, you know, debacle. So I didn't know. I wasn't aware of its resonance, really. So it was quite coincidental. It went very well with our whole concept.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, that... I was a sort of slightly clueless old band leader trying to stay with it, you know, which is actually not very far from the truth.
you've become, it's like Alan Partridge, the way that Coogan played Alan Partridge as always 20 years older than him, and now you're kind of, you're catching up with yourself.
No,
but I think at the time as well, it was such an interesting, I think what you did was actually very ahead of your time. You know, when you think that then later on, like Paul Anka did swing versions of songs and did a whole album and did unbelievably well.
Well, not only ahead of its time, I mean, not that you want to blow your trumpet, but I don't think Paul Anka would have been doing that if we hadn't.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so as well. And even,
I mean, what was interesting, again, in what happened subsequently, or essentially just symptomatic of general, you know, a sort of later postmodern thing, which was sort of unconsciously going on, but one thing that a while ago now was God, what's his name now? I can't remember his names now. He did Amy Winehouse and stuff. Mark Ronson did. That was quite interesting because it wasn't that long after what we did, and yet what they did was taken to be quite, you know, fairly respectable, serious, and not silly at all.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And him saying, but surely this stuff, you know, this backrack, et cetera, it's rubbish, which sort of no one would dare say now.
No. But
that's how it was viewed.
And even that's crazy because even, you know, you probably don't know this then, but on the cover of Definitely Maybe, you know, Oasis's debut album, which is pretty much a full-on rock, you know, punky rock album, there is a big picture of Burt Bacharach.
I remember the album, it's the one with the big portrait of Bacharach.
Yeah, it's a big portrait of Burt Bacharach on it. So Noel Gallagher, even then, was making it very clear, this is, you know, this is the songwriting tradition.
It's classic pop songs. He was sort of stating he was writing classic pop songwriting, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. So it might have had
a bit like ABC, but, you know, 15 years later.
Yeah, and with that rock edge.
He was very deliberately stating, this is, you know, goes back to the tradition of them.
Definitely. And with the likes of Shaker Maker, which was their second single, it just completely lifted the melody from I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing by the New Seekers.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and he also did, there's a track called Fade Away that is literally the same melody as Freedom by Wham. You know, and so he didn't care,
that's,
you know.
The other thing, because when we did it, people, you know, critics were saying, oh, how astute of us to notice that, yeah, a lot of that material was lifted from other things.
Yeah, plagiarised.
No, because I've never heard that material.
I'd like to build a world, a home, and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtle doves. I'd like to teach.
Sing with me.
Perfect harmony.
Perfect harmony.
And I'd like to hold it in my arms and keep it company. I'd like
So, because I suppose it was almost like the fact that Noel Gallagher would lift people's material, absolutely. So you doing Wonderwall, it was almost like an ironic comment on that, but actually you didn't know. It was just like, oh, there's a song.
Totally unintended.
Yeah, it's just a song to rearrange. But
it wasn't. I think my kind of ironic commentary was on pop music generally, not Oasis. If anything, not even an ironic commentary. It was just a kind of humorous, faux ignorance.
I suppose the thing is as well is at the same time you had people like Divine Comedy and My Life Story, who were
My Life Story. I remember Jake Shillington, whatever his name is.
Jake, yes.
I remember My Life Story. I remember the time. I'd never heard of these people as well. As we started getting in the press, I was reading around it.
Yeah, no. So they were very much as well. I mean, it was kind of called Baroque pop at the time. And so they were doing something not too dissimilar from you at all. I mean, I was re-listening to the A Groovy Place album over the last week, and there's a track like even your original tracks, like that brilliant one about falling in love with the crusty. That is not, that could be a Divine Comedy track.
Our record company. It's funny. I don't know if you know. The connection, well, there's no connection with us. There's a novelist now called John Niven.
Yes, Kill Your Friends.
He was our A&R man at the time. It's quite funny.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. sort of slightly cheesed off that he had this sort of huge hit with something which I think he perceived as being totally uncred and not his plan at all. it's really nice, though. But, oh God, I forgot what I was saying now. But that the him. I remember him saying when they did the album, we think, oh God, we need another single or something. Finding nothing. And they say, oh yeah, Krusty Kell. Well, it could almost be Jarvis Cocker.
Yeah.
Except there's no chorus. So that couldn't happen. And so it would be too confusing. It was such a mess. The whole thing really, as regards promoting, because what we did was quite sort of culturally messy anyway. It was not something that could be sustained. Well, it could be sustained, I suppose, but not at an interesting level.
I never thought I'd ever fall in love with a crusty girl like you. Living together in a little tree house big enough for two. You can tell me all your troubles, let me free your mind. I could tell you stories about the life that I've left behind.
Well, it's funny because, often people, come out with like Bowie coming out with Space Oddity, or whatever it is. Someone, comes out with one big single doing a certain thing.
Not
but
me.
Then it's, yeah, exactly. But then it's like, what do you do? And I suppose because you had that image, you had the hair and the way you dress and everything. And so what do you do? Do you kind of say, throw that all off and go, no, this is, now we're being serious. Or, it must be a real hard line to walk.
Well, yeah, it wasn't that interesting because I suppose it's funny, Alan Partridge or who else is that? I'm trying to think who's image-wise. And this is me, in the words of Mike Yarwood.
Okay.
But if someone sees themselves as an actor or has a career separately, it's different, isn't it? But I didn't. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't interested in it. So I was the act was... little art object, if you like. So you did that. I wasn't interested. I was very relieved to actually be performing in disguise.
Mm.
So rather than, really awful being recognised, etc. So, so it's quite, it's still funny nowadays. That's funny, we've been talking because we play very occasionally. And everyone's got their phones now, filming and taking photographs and live streaming or whatever you're doing. So it would be, those days it was quite easy to just present an image in a front, but now it'd be very difficult to present an artificial one in that same way.
Sure.
But it's funny how it changed.
No,
I guess what we also did when because it's so obviously artificial, it's different than something like my life story, which is there's almost the feeling that we're living this life, you know, like mods or whatever.
Mm.
Whereas I'm probably clearly not.
Yeah.
You know, dressing up, anyone can do it.
What I thought was interesting, actually, as well, I've been watching sort of some of the old interviews you did are on YouTube now.
God. And that's it again. Thank God it's not. It wasn't around more.
But what's really interesting is that you're quite deadpan. You know, that in those interviews, like there's one with in the broom cupboard with like this aardvark puppet thing.
Blue Peter is coming up, but our guest this afternoon is Mike Flowers from the Mike Flowers Pops. Yeah. Thanks for coming in, Mike.
Pleasure.
Good to see you here. So you had a huge hit at Christmas with Wonderwall. How big a hit did you expect that to actually be?
Well, I didn't expect it to be a hit at all, really. It was, didn't expect to release it even. It was quite a surprise, very pleasant surprise, yeah.
Yeah, but when do you get your hair done, Mike? Because
actually, all right, in a minute. I'll talk about his hair. Still talking about Wonderwall now.
Okay.
Sorry, interrupting you. Sorry about that.
So you just did it for a bit of a laugh?
Yeah, well, to make music, to amuse myself, really.
It was quite an unusual thing because most people who do a cover version pick an old song and try and make it sound up to date. You're the first one that really became a hit that took a modern song and made it sound old. How did you come up with that idea?
Well, I don't know. We try and, you know, keep up with the times, really. And I suppose I'd describe it as timeless.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the song or the style?
The style.
Right, the yeah. Easy listening vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah, groovy. Now, I want to know about your hair, though. Where'd you get your hair done?
All right, okay. Where do you get your hair done?
I just do it myself, you know. I drag a comb through it in the morning. Doesn't take much looking after. Yeah. Wash it as little as possible because I hate washing my hair.
Okay. So for anyone listening, watching, who wants to get into that easy listening vibe, what will be your top tips for the look? You've got the hair sorted. What else?
Get rid of all your dreary dark clothes and have some more colourful, fun clothes. And if you haven't got beautiful, natural blonde hair like myself, then you might have to get a wig.
A wig. You'd consider a wig, would you, Otis?
Okay, yeah, I'll wear a wig.
Okay,
yeah.
And of course, the footwear is important.
Now, I remember, yeah, we did lots of interviews with puppets.
Yeah, and...
pop music was involved with puppetry quite a lot in those.
Yeah, and so you're... Yeah, obviously, I suppose what they... You know, because you came before Austin Powers, you know, and that's the thing, and...
Well, I got in touch. Well, Mike Myers got in touch. Because, you know, we did a track.
Yeah, you do Call Me, don't you?
Call Me, yeah. So they wanted to do Light My Fire, which we'd done, but the Doors, Ray Manzarek wouldn't give them permission. Because I think Mike Myers had taken the piss out of them in the Wayne's World film.
Yes, yeah.
So we said, oh, what can we do instead? So we did Call Me, you know, which was nice. But, I think that we were basically eclipsed by Austin Powers more than anything.
Yeah.
Which, again, you know, I like to think... someone's saying that somewhere, you know, that we were the pop equivalent of... Austin Powers, and so it's like, well, actually, it's the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it definitely came after, and you definitely set the tone for that.
If you're feeling sad and lonely, there's a service I can render. Tell the one who loves you only, I can be so warm and tender. Call me. Don't be afraid, you can call me. Maybe it's late, just call me, tell me, and I'll be around.
Because it was in the air, wasn't it? The sort of the 60s vibe and the easy listening vibe, you know, was definitely in the air. And these clubs were sort of popping up over the country. And you were definitely at the forefront of that. But
well, it's funny, because we always said about Oasis and using pop history, basically, to write their songs. Yeah, it was just, you know, it signalled the end of pop music history, slightly, you know, philosophically.
Yeah.
Finally, you know, in the late 80s, it was beginning to happen, and especially with instrumental dance music, and then this was a final hurrah, which was all totally nostalgic by then. Everything was nostalgic.
Yeah. And it's gone,
but
even...
But you did that overtly, you know.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, you made that... The show, you sort of said, no, this is the show now, but it's so funny that but I think that's the tricky thing, is that you didn't come on to those interviews and things like, hey, and playing this overt character.
I'm capable of doing so.
Oh, really?
I think people did want me to. I remember, who's the thingy Wright, who's the DJ?
Steve Wright. Radio 2.
And he was quite disappointed that I wasn't, you know, presenting an act, being interviewed, etc.
Yeah, because it is. It's like they're coming in, and you've obviously you've got your sort of stage costume on, but you're just saying, yeah, well, it's good. You know, we're trying our best, and that's sort of like,
well, I'm quite serious about it, but anyway. I mean, I refer to it as a mantle rather than a costume.
Okay.
A mantle that anyone can don. You know, it's an idea. You know, it's like, mumming or something. I don't know. Anyway. But, I couldn't do it anyway.
No.
No,
fair enough. But I mean, going back to kind of listening back to A Groovy Place now, you know, there's like things like, the cover of Venus is a Boy and things like that that are. Yeah, and the Velvet Underground kind of medley and things. It's like, this is... It's funny that you mentioned the Mark Ronson thing, because that's exactly what I thought. You know, this is no different to, you know, Mark Ronson's God Put a Smile on My Face, or the, you know...
It's a
the...
bit more eccentric, really.
Yeah, exactly. It's really interesting.
Yeah, he did the album covers, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah, so there was the covers album, and then there was the...
He had a nice cover.
Yeah, yeah, but it's just so... It's just funny, isn't it?
That was really odd, really, how quickly that switched.
Yeah.
That it became reasonable.
Yeah, it's suddenly okay. You know, it's just the label that you put on it. Yeah, but no, it's
no longer novelty.
Yeah, but then, and the other one as well, that passed me by when it came out, and it was only sort of looking at this, is the track she did with Corner Shop a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And that was fantastic. Yeah. You know, and that's...
That was 2 years ago, probably is.
Yeah, and that's sort of, you know, I mean, firstly, it doesn't necessarily sound like Corner Shop. It's, you know, I know it's credited Corner Shop and Mike Flowers Pops, but you know, that to me sounds like you know, your guys, but just with a bit more of a rockier edge to it. But I mean, how did that come about?
Ginger just got in touch through a mutual friend conversation, I think, and they've been doing that anyway. They were doing kind of easy listening versions of their material, sort of strangely in a way, for, you know, a few years ago. It was actually, what they were doing was very much like what Paul McCartney did with Ram. Do you know that?
Yep, yeah.
What's his name? I can't remember. It begins with T. Tottingham or something. I can't remember. Anyway, but yeah, it was very much like that. So it was these listening versions of their rock hits, but instrumental. And then through mutual friend, who, you know, said, by the way, I play him. Mike Flowers' band. I said, oh, that'd be interesting. So he gave me the tracks, and I sort of chopped them up and sang over them, basically, my studio. So I dubbed myself on them and chopped them up and stuff to make them into songs again, rather than instrumental.
I think they're great.
It's great. Far less work than having to arrange it all yourself.
Yeah.
Because the arranger was very good who did those, I thought. Yeah.
But no, I mean, and then even going back to the stuff you were doing, the cover versions and things in the 90s, I mean, were you the main arranger as well? You're the one going...
I was the only arranger.
Yeah. so did you...
I think part of the idea was, again, the personas, I was thinking, I'd do maybe some soundtrack work or whatever. And it would be a good way of pushing the boat out and doing that. And also knowing that if you've got a band and you're playing to, you know, small audiences and little venues, they don't want to hear original material. Paradoxically, I suppose. But then, you know, in the belief that any progression in pop music was, contradictory anyway. So you might as well do good songs rather than try and compete with your own songs.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, and things like, you know, like taking Wonderwall as an example, I mean, you hear that, you hear the chord structure, you listen to it, and do you then... What's the process like to where you actually break that down and go, no, you know what, I'm not going to start with today is going to be the day. I'm going to start with the second verse. Let's move that to the front.
Yeah. That's funny. It's getting weird, isn't it? I think it starts with listening to it and thinking, is there anything that grabs me in it? I remember people would constantly, like when I talk to you, say about Paul Anka, at the time, constantly people say, you've got to do Teen Spirit, you know. And I said, I've heard Teen Spirit and there's nothing of interest in it really for what we do. Yeah. And I think Paul Anka proves that actually. But it was finding, I suppose, some resonance with our concept. So Venus as a Boy and Bjork generally, there was a kind of psychedelic naivety which you'd see also find in something like, you know, Jimmy Webb and with this dimension, on Sunshine Pop. So that is in there. So you try and find something like that, or lyrics, you know, certain rather flowery lyrics, which, you know, so Prince, who was already, you know, recreating psychedelia in the mid-80s. So that was in there. And, you know what I mean? So the original material has to have something slightly excessive and eccentric in it, I think, to work.
No, but
you listen to it and think, right, what do I like? And then you just sort of launch into the bits you like, I suppose.
Yeah.
But
what I love about it, and what really jumped out of the radio, you know, in 1995 was, you know, you say, like, even, you know, the Oasis version goes like, about you now, whereas you go, about you, you know, and it's just that little twist. Then you get a do 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 do.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So these little bits, you know.
It is. But it's
forced decorum. I'm really a big fan of Jack Jones, the singer.
Okay.
And what he did was quite interesting. I mean, a couple of the arrangements I just nicked, basically, from Jack Jones, Marty Page. But that, you know, singing, it gets fairly complicated if you talk about, you know, white musicians' appropriation of black music, which is what it's all about. Popular music, or pop music rather. You kind of point that out slightly.
Yeah.
I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.
I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you.
Yeah.
Song.
That's interesting.
I suppose. There's some humour in that, I suppose. It was also to say, this is a soppy love song.
Yeah.
They're sort of pretending it's a rock song, it's actually a soppy love song.
Strip away the perceived cool and just get to the core of what the song is.
Romance. It's romantic, you know. I wanted to make more romantic. And saying about you is much more personal than about you now. And also the line, the way it scans the now, seems like punctuation, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's also the chords. I haven't broken down, I'm not a musicologist, I don't, but it is something in those chords in that line where you go, feels the way I do about you. There's something in that transition there that you just move, you know, there's a wistful nostalgia that isn't in the Oasis version. And when you're so used to the Oasis version and you hear that, you just go, oh, wow, it's such an impact. But,
something you plonk around and you say, well, that sounds quite, you know, lucky because you stumble across something that sounds quite nice.
Yeah.
So I think it's that as well. But keeping it in, I suppose, is part of the, you know, authorial process. But, no, they act out very well. I was very pleased.
Yeah.
Really. And sometimes good stuff and suddenly it becomes its own little thing somehow through chance.
Yeah,
and not really your, you know, agency. It just worked out well. We made good decisions about how to present it.
And that's fine. And it's still obviously, you know, does it still keep you in, keep a bit of money well, coming in every year?
Well, financially.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't, no, because I didn't write it, you know.
Okay.
So, despite the composing everything except most of the melody, I don't get any writing credits.
That's a pain.
Or hence money. But I did make sure I had two of my tracks on the B-side.
Yes, yeah.
Thus getting two-thirds of the publishing for the single.
Yeah, oh, that's very very smart.
Well, as advised by, you know, people in the know.
Fair play. And in the years previous, I suppose, like, it was quite funny when I spoke to the Oasis drummer, the original Oasis drummer, Tony McCarroll, who had a big mop of curly hair when he was in Oasis, which he no longer has. And he says it's brilliant because it means that he doesn't get recognised in the same way that, that Noel and Liam do. I mean, is it quite good that you can take off that mantle, as you say, and then you can, and obviously Mike Flowers isn't your real name as well. So have you've just been able to live your life without, you know, people grabbing you in the street?
Oh, yeah. Oh, fantastic, yeah. I mean, not now. I mean, yes, I suppose if I went round like that now, people would go, oh, God, yeah. But at the time, you know, it's wonderful, you know. Well, I presume it's wonderful because I can't imagine what it would be like to be, you know, Jarvis Cocker or something.
Yeah.
Who you do see around the place and you think, God, how uncomfortable he must feel.
Yeah.
You know, in little clubs and things, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, no, I couldn't. I don't think I could do it. I think probably, well, apart from the reason that, you know, once public decided, you know, to move elsewhere, that I couldn't, you know, I couldn't have pushed into staying because I couldn't hack it. And I'm always amazed by people like Liam or Noel, especially when you've got a few quid, why you should want to continue doing that.
Mm-hmm. So were you quite happy actually to say, you know what, I had that time, and I know you've done a lot of writing in the background and arranging and things like that. Is that where you generally feel most more comfortable?
Well, not if it's a deadline, paid job, but I feel extremely uncomfortable. But which a lot of that was actually, and that was originally a commission, you know. It was supposedly going to be a weekly thing. I think the week after that for Kevin Greening, we did the Beatles, Free as a Bird.
Okay.
Which obviously was completely ignored then. I suppose so, yes. I couldn't. It's fun, and that level we did it was good fun, and I really enjoyed it. It was so kind of unlikely. Mm. It would have been very boring to have a predictable hit.
Mm. Oh, that's great. And did you ever meet the Oasis guys?
There was lots of occasions we could have at festivals and things, and people said to go over and oh, I don't know, it's probably embarrassing. but I did bump into Noel in Hanway Street, if you know it, in London, which it's still got a few record shops, but it used to be the record collector's little alleyway by Tottenham Court Road. And he was there, and I was round the corner with my friends, and she said, go and say hello, he's, you know, there's Noel there. So I did. Because it was away from everyone and everything. So I introduced myself, and he said, shook my hand and said, oh, thanks very much. I think you bought me a swimming pool. Which is nice.
Maybe you should turn up in your trunks and have a swim in it, Mike. You paid for it.
I think you might have said that elsewhere, the sort of thing one does with interviews, you know, they become increasingly scripted. But it was nice, friendly about it. If he takes it all too seriously, really.
No. Well, he was very complimentary about it at the time as well.
I've heard a version of it by Ryan Adams, which I think is brilliant.
And Mike Flowers Pops covering it as well.
Somebody on Radio 1, when they first played it, said that they'd found the original Wonderwall. They played it on Radio 1, and the premise was, the blagging bastard. They found this tune from the 50s. I got a fucking phone call. I was in the States off someone going, did, you know Wonderwall? And I'm going, oh yeah, man, yeah. And they're going, you did write that, didn't you? Yeah. I said maybe. Well, there's this tune doing the rounds in England that they're claiming. And I was like, really? And somebody played it me down the phone. And I was like, you bunch of dicks.
It was a phenomenon. I mean, you were almost Christmas number one, which was just, yeah.
Yes,
amazing.
Yes. I was wondering, at the time, I was very relieved that we weren't.
Okay.
Because of the, you know, it was pretty full on, really. mm-hmm. you know, for a couple of weeks. But mm-hmm. In retrospect, it seems that would have been quite even funnier, really. Especially, you know, with it being Michael Jackson.
Yes. Earthsong. Yeah. I think. Thank you so much for your time, basically. It's just been really good to speak to you. And as you can tell from the way I've been gushing for the last sort of half an hour, I love Bacharach. I love, you know, the Jimmy Webb's, you know, writing and Beach Boys. And so I do not just see this as like a humorous thing. I think what you did was absolutely brilliant. And most of the best music has humor in it. The Beatles had humor. The Who had humor,
Well, I was sort of discussing this. So David Bowie's sort of first hits were novelty records.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Mothers of Invention were seen as a novelty act. Kraftwerk was seen as a novelty act.
Mm.
Not that I can possibly compare ourselves to the innovation, you know, foisted upon popular culture by these acts.
Yeah.
But, you know, novelty is the research and development side of the avant-garde, if you like.
That is... I don't think I can beat that as a quote to end it on, mate. That's fantastic.
Maybe chopping something else for avant-garde doesn't sound quite so pretentious.
No, that's going in. That's the highlight. That's brilliant, mate. But no, well, thank you, Mike. Thank you so much for your time. It's really greatly appreciated.
Lovely. Thanks very much.
I would like to say to you, but I don't know how. And baby, are you gonna be the one that saves me? And after all, you're my wonderwall.
So next up, we're going to do the next part of our Oasis A to Z. And next up is A Quick Peep. Now, A Quick Peep was the first Andy Bell song for Oasis. And I've just been editing a few bits and pieces together, and Andy Bell just tweeted, they've just played a gig in Seoul, Ride did. Seoul, you knocked us sideways last night, what a crowd, hope to be back soon, onwards to Hong Kong. And I just replied, pleased to hear it went well, Andy, I'm just editing the next podcast episode where we discuss A Quick Peep, any thoughts, comments? And he replied, which was, we'd been listening to a lot of Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac, I wrote the tune in the back of a tour bus, always intended as a little breather between songs, hence the title. So, fantastic. Great to get a response from Andy Bell. Absolutely brilliant. I then replied to him and said, thanks so much for the response. I'll be sure to include it. You know you're welcome to come on the podcast any time, plus only live down the road so you can come around for a cuppa. And he didn't reply or like that tweet or anything. So, once again, he did this before when we did a poll on the best Andy Bell Oasis song, and he replied saying, turn up the sun. And I then jumped in and said, oh, Andy, do you want to do an interview? And then he didn't respond. So there we go. But yeah, very cool. That's Andy Bell. I think that means he's officially been on the Oasis podcast. But I put it out there and I asked for your responses. And Khan Might Say came back to me. He has a YouTube channel, which is fantastic. He sings and plays guitar and does a lot of Oasis stuff. So here we go.
Hey, Khan Might Say here. James, I think you're doing an amazing job with this podcast. I am an avid listener. So, I want to give you my thoughts on A Quick Peep. Now, this barely qualifies as a song, but we'll call it a song, as it is on Heathen Chemistry. just over a minute long, a minute 17. And it's not like the Swamp Song, where a full version of it was recorded, like a four-minute version, and then they took excerpts from it. It's just, that is the track that it is on Heathen Chemistry. And written by Andy Bell, the acoustic guitar part played by Andy Bell. And for me, it's the best thing he's written in Oasis. I say that with a little tongue-in-cheek. Probably, Turn Up the Sun is obviously a great tune. Nature of Reality, probably the second best thing. This is the third best thing Andy Bell has written in Oasis. But it is very, very satisfying to play on the guitar. As a guitarist myself, and oh, I happen to have my guitar. It's very, very nice to play. I don't think my satisfaction is really coming through on audio, but trust me, the facial expressions I'm pulling right now, well, especially playing this bit. Yeah. And actually, I don't skip this song at all. I always listen to it and sometimes play along. I don't know what else to say, really, except that it's a good bridge between Little by Little and Probably All in the Mind. But for me, I skip Probably All in the Mind. So it's a bridge between Little by Little and She Is Love, which is weird because those two songs were released as a double A-side single. But yeah, I'll finish this off by again saying it's the third best thing that Andy Bell's written in Oasis. And the less said about Thank You for the Good Times, the better. Oh, and also I think a better title for it would have been A Quick Poop. But that's just me.
So thank you for that, Khan might say. So if you remember last time we talked about A Bell Will Ring, it was great because there was an EPK, as they call it, which is the electronic press kit issued for Don't Believe the Truth. And it had a breakdown of all the different songs, which was good because we could hear contemporary thoughts of Noel and Liam and Gem on A Bell Will Ring, which was really, really good. So obviously there was an EPK released for Heathen Chemistry, so it's a really good document to go back for and find out what they said about the song at the time. And they talk about all the other songs pretty much, and they don't talk about A Quick Peep, and Andy Bell isn't even there. It's Liam and Noel and Gem there. So yeah, so Andy very conspicuous by his absence and nothing to say about A Quick Peep at all. But what's quite interesting, wondering about the composition of A Quick Peep. So it is, as we said, written by Andy Bell. And we think it's composed by him on the acoustic guitar on the Brotherly Love Tour, which is the tour with Steve White and when they're playing with the Black Crowes. And the reason we think that is because in the documentary that came out at the time, which was released in parts over the different DVDs that came out with the CDs, Andy's interviewed and he's sat there fiddling away on the guitar playing it.
Before this tour, I've never ever played a good gig in New York before. I mean, I came in with Ride and with Hurricane and with Oasis last year, and they were all really, you gigs, you just walk off and go and dressing room and go like this. You know, that was really tough in some way, whether it's that bad audience, well, not bad audience, but like a quiet audience, or just you played bad or whatever it was, didn't get that feeling you want. But these gigs in New York have been fantastic, all of them, especially the first two. Second night was the very best. That was the best night of the tour, second night in Radio City.
So A Quick Peep was never played by Oasis live, however it was played by Andy Bell on his own on the Saturday the 12th of August 2006. He played the song at a festival called Festival in Umeå in North Sweden, and someone captured 30 seconds of it, so here's 30 seconds of it. Woo! Okay, so I put it on Twitter. We polled it to get the results, and the results were as follows. Scores were 4 out of 5 got 14%, 3 got 20%, 2 got 37%, and 1 got 29%. So overall, the average was 2.19, which does mean it's the lowest song so far. It is just less than Get Off Your High Horse Lady at 2.86. However, to be fair, it is just a little instrumental, so it's hard to compare it to these proper full songs. But, you know, it's an album track, and that's one of the joys of doing this A to Z like this. You know, we're not just focusing on the big songs, we're focusing on everything that was officially released by the band. So let's get your comments. Michael Hart at What a Mind Blast said, "It's fine, just a little jam. That whole middle section of Heathen Chemistry, track 7 to 9, is a bit meh. I remember them saying that Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac was an inspiration for the song. Not that I hear it. Andy wrote plenty of better Oasis tracks." Nick Poucher, who is at Nick Poucher, said, "I don't get all the hate for this track. For me, it's an inoffensive, forgettable interlude. Nothing more, nothing less." Ryan Harvey, who is at The Harvey Boys, said, "Doesn't really belong on an Oasis album, I think. Maybe a Shadows album. Andy Bell must be one of the luckiest men alive." Dan Best, who is at DanBest84, said, "Maybe Alexander Armstrong could use it for a new pointless theme tune." So for those of you that don't know and thinking, what the hell was that? Pointless is a British TV show, a quiz show. And yeah, that theme tune does sound kind of familiar, doesn't it? Kyle Nollins, who's at Coligno, said, "Pointless, really. Grandpa Batman would have given it a 0. He said, I don't consider it a true Oasis tune. Doesn't fit the sound or theme of the band at all. Make me wonder if there were contractual agreements in place for Andy and Gem to be allowed at least one track per album. Hashtag skip to next track." Jim Regan, who's at JBone72, said, "Eh." Thanks for that. Jason Crawford, who is at JasonC87, said, "I like it. Listened to this album for the first time in ages the other day. Forgot how good it was." Chris Park, who is at Park1_Chris, said, "I'm not sure what to say about this, but da 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 da." Andy Bell plays this, but I'm sure you know this. I'm out. Thanks, Chris. I'm assuming that those da da da's is that's what he's meant to do. And Marty J says, "That'll do me." So when I recorded the other day with Will Cooper and Sam Huxley in Manchester, it was last episode, we talked about A Bell Will Ring, and then we also did talk about A Quick Peep. So I will drop that in here.
What's after A Bell Will Ring?
Huh?
What's the song after A Bell Will Ring?
What's the song after A Bell Will Ring? Yeah. What, on the album?
No, as in your alphabet.
Oh, A Quick Peep. Oh. And then onto Aquarius.
Why can't we do Aquarius?
I prefer A Quick Peep.
A Quick Peep?
I think A Quick Peep is quite underrated.
Do you like A Quick Peep?
Quite like it.
What do you think? Do you like A Quick Peep?
Let me listen to it.
I can't remember. A Quick Peep is an Andy Bell composed original instrumental on Heathen Chemistry.
It's just an incidental track, so I don't... Yeah.
It's just like a little interlude, basically.
Hang on. Let's play it.
It's for me.
He plays...
The bass. Yeah. I do remember this.
I used to play that on guitar a lot.
Yeah. It's a good fun little thing to play.
It feels like it should be a Supergrass song.
It's a good song
It's got a little piano and the little Gaz Coombsy kind of little guitar.
All your guitarists out there, all your pop pickers. It's a great song to warm your fingers up on a guitar, spend a quick peek.
A quick peek. Yeah. And then it's finished. That's it, it's over.
It's only 1 minute 30.
Yeah.
And then it's done.
it's good.
It's a nice little palate cleanser halfway through the album, isn't it?
It's a shame that what comes next, but yeah, it's good.
But what comes after a quick fix?
No problem.
Cheers, Chief.
Probably All in the Mind.
Oh, bad.
And then She Is Love. And then Born on a Different... It's all bad after that. I've got to be honest, it's all bad after that.
It's not good, is it? It's not the best album.
So in terms of personnel, it's a tricky one because, once again, as I've said in here before, it's annoying that they don't always make it clear who does what on individual tracks. Now, the CD lists personnel as follows. Obviously, Liam Gallagher lead vocals. There's no lead vocals on here. Noel Gallagher, guitars, keyboards, vocals. Gem Archer, guitars, keyboards, piano on track 4, Andy Bell bass, Alan White drums, percussion. So it mentions additional musicians. It mentions Paul Stacey, Mike Rowe and Johnny Marr, but it never actually mentions anything about them doing anything on track 7. So according to that, Andy Bell doesn't play guitar on the track because Andy Bell's not listed as playing guitar, he's listed as playing bass, but it's clearly him. It's clearly him playing the guitar. Similarly, there's an organ in there. Yeah, that's not listed as being played by anyone on this track. So whether they just didn't bother including this track in the track listing, I don't know. But that's just a bit bizarre. Having listened to the track a little bit more doing this, I think it's a bit harsh, actually, just to say it's like, oh, it's an instrumental, there's not much to it. Actually, the structure of it is really interesting. And the musicianship of it is very good. If you can hear, obviously, it's a really good guitar track, as you heard from the live one he does in Sweden. And then the bass playing along with it is really good. There's like the bass line like really bubbles along, which I think is really good. And as we talked about last episode, it's quite rare in Oasis that you have this sort of very prominent bass lines, but I think it definitely is here, which is very cool. And yeah, you get these organ stabs as well, which is good, and the effect on the guitar like really jumps out at you. It's quite it's quite powerful the way that just those like meow grab you. And then what I also then really like is just the way it all sort of ties up at the end as these hand claps come in as well, which is cool to hear. And then you get that little guitar run, do 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 do, wow! And then you get that sort of big finish at the end. I really like it. And then the That'll Do Me, as was referenced by one of the people that commented on Twitter, it officially comes in at the start of the next track, probably All in the Mind. But yeah, I mean, it's, I suppose it could be seen as the end of this song because it's Andy Bell having recorded his own song, saying That'll Do Me, as in he's happy with the recording. So yeah, That'll Do Me. So as we always talk about here as well, I think the last thing to cover on this is the placement of the song. Should it be where it is on the album? Should it be a B-side? What do we think? And so, yeah, looking at Heathen Chemistry, I'm happy with it being there. I think it's a good spot. I agree with what Andy Bell said in his tweet, that it's just a breather between songs. Yeah, and I think on Heathen Chemistry, as I say, it comes between Little by Little and Probably All in the Mind. It sort of sits nicely in there. I say it flows quite nicely into Probably All in the Mind. And as well, because Probably All in the Mind's got such a prominent bass line, I've always kind of thought of it as like an Andy Bell song. But it's not. It is written by Noel. And then it goes to She Is Love, Born a Different Cloud, Better Man. So it's quite interesting that yeah, it's not the strongest second half of an Oasis album, I'd say. But actually, yeah, I really like A Quick Peep. I wouldn't skip it. It's a good little song. It shouldn't have been a single, obviously, but I wouldn't necessarily have had it as a B-side. I think it's just perfect where it is and what it is. So, fair play, Andy Bell. Now, I've been nice about a quick peep. Come and do an interview. Okay, so a few people have been in touch over the last week or so about a few different bits, and so I just thought I'd pick up on those here. A couple of weeks ago now, on the last but one Oasis 8 said, we did You've Got the Heart of a Star, and I had a chat through it with Brian Garcia. And one of those, in that discussion, we were talking about the line, life ain't your mistress. And I said in there, I couldn't quite get my head around it. And I needed Katie Georgiou, who is our lyric expert in residence here at the Oasis podcast, to shed some further light on it. And well, it took her a few weeks, but she got back in touch. So thank you, Katie. She does have quite a bit on being like a writer and a psychologist and now having her own podcast. But yes, so here's Katie Georgiou with her thoughts on You've Got the Heart of a Star, and specifically that life ain't your mistress line.
Your business, 'cause life ain't your mistress. Come on, my brothers and sisters.
Hi, James. I'm just sending this because I listened to your podcast episode a couple of episodes back where you were talking to Brian Garcia about You've Got the Heart of a Star, and it took me by surprise when I suddenly heard you say, we need Katie Georgiou to interpret these lyrics. So I thought, okay, I'll have a little think, and I'll have a little think about the lyric that you mentioned. And I think the specific line that you were talking about with Brian was the line, so go about your business, 'cause life ain't your mistress. I do have a few thoughts about it. The way I see that lyric is, for me, it's kind of making a statement about how don't let life control. Life isn't your mistress that's shackling you up in chains. Like, you're in control of your life. You get to say how you want your life to be. So rather than worrying about all the things you've done and worrying about who you are and all your little foibles, and instead of worrying about the way you look and what you've done and what people say you are, you take control, you take hold of the reins, and you go out and live your life and go about your business. I suppose that's how I interpret it. And I really love the lyrics of that song. I don't necessarily feel that I have anything deeper than that to say about that line, but it really... I love it, and it just, there's something emotive about it when he sings it, and motivating, and even if it doesn't really mean anything, for me, when I hear it, it has that sentiment of, I've got faith in you. And there's something about that song that it has faith in you for who you are, no matter what you are. It doesn't matter if you're not perfect. It's almost like Noel saying, I love you anyway. And there's something really empowering about that. And it's the kind of thing that, it might sound a bit cheesy, but sometimes I think it's the kind of thing that we always wish that our parents would say to us. It doesn't matter, we love you anyway. And it feels like that's what Noel is saying. And when I hear that song, he really sounds like a dad in that song. Like a dad giving you great advice. And I can imagine him saying that to his sons. So, I think it's a really lovely song.
That's great. Thank you so much for getting in touch, Katie. And anyone that's listening, if you have thoughts on A Quick Peep or A Bell Will Ring or You've Got the Heart of a Star or the song that's coming up next, which is Acquiesce. So that's the next one coming on Oasis A to Z. So it's going to be a big one. There's already been loads and loads of replies on Twitter. I put the poll up already and it's crushing it. It's obviously getting a mainly 5 out of 5. It could well end up being the number one Oasis song. It will definitely be up there with the Live Forevers and Supersonics and things. So we shall see. So please do get in touch. And as always, audio messages to email oasispod@gmail.com. So I also had an email this week from Mild Mannered Max. So if you remember, he came on and did episode 36 when we were in Edinburgh. And we went talk through Noel Gallagher's Desert Island Disc choices. And he has his own blog, which is the Mild Mannered Army. And make sure you check it out and follow him at Mild Mannered Max on Twitter and stuff. And a little piece he did for the Mild Mannered Army that he fired over to me, which I thought was really good, was like a retelling of the gospel, but sort of Oasis related. And I thought it was fantastic. So I asked him to like record it for me. And unfortunately, it's like 9 minutes long, so it's a bit long to play on the podcast here. What I have done is I've uploaded it to Patreon. At the moment, it's only for patrons, but then I think in a few days' time, it will be becoming public for anyone to see. So once that's up, I'll let you know. The Patreon is patreon.com/oasispod. So here is a little bit here just to give you guys a little taste of that. Here's Mild Mannered Max in full-on reverential mode.
And it came to pass that in the year of our Lord, 1966, and in the ninth month of that year, an angel of the Lord did appear unto a woman in the city of Manchester. And it came to pass that the angel spake unto the woman, whose name was Margaret, and did say unto her, Fear not, Peggy, for I bring you glad tidings, great joy. The Lord hath chosen thee to bring forth two sons, who shall be most pleasing unto him, and who shall bring great joy to his children. And it came to pass that Peggy was sore afraid, and was discombobulated, and did speak unto the angel of the Lord, and did say these words unto him, I think you might have the wrong person. I've already got one son, Paul. He's a lovely lad, but I'm not sure about having any more kids, to be honest with you. It's so exhausting. And now the angel of the Lord did speak again unto Peggy, with much firmness, and did say unto her, Peggy, the Lord does not make mistakes, and verily, verily, I say unto you again that thou wilt bear two more sons, and they shall be chosen above all the other sons of Manchester, and will bring happiness, joy, and salvation to the hearts of all those who will not only hear them, but who will open up their minds, eyes, and ears, and truly listen to them. Thus saith the Lord. And then the heavens were filled with angelic hosts proclaiming, Joy to the world. And it came to pass that 9 months later, Peggy gave birth to the first of the two sons that had been prophesied by the angel. And lo, she did call him Noah.
So thank you very much to the Mild Mannered One for putting that together for us. There's a much longer version on Patreon. It's really worth listening to. So head over there and check it out. If you are already a patron, then you'll be able to check it out now. Or if not, then I think it's going to be available to the public within a few days. So just keep an eye out for that. And also over on Patreon at the moment, I've just posted a new article, which is by Kyle Cotter, who's been doing a series of like notable places to visit related to Oasis. So he's just done the last one of that, which covers off the rest of the world, which is really worth a read. And also, I've just posted over there the British Podcast Awards entry that I put together. So it's a 20 minutes, it's a best of. It features five different sort of clips from interviews. So we've got Brian Cannon, Tony McCarroll, Katie, Georgiou, Brandon Arend, and Jess Greenfield. So give that a listen. Let me know what you think. And the British Podcast Awards voting is going to start in about a week's time. So when it does, I will be harassing you on the social medias and on here to go and vote for me, because while most of them are chosen by a panel, which I'm not going to have much hope with, I think, because there is still that stigma in certain circles against Oasis. However, the Listener's Choice Award, is there? And so if we can just get as many people as possible to vote in the Listener's Choice Award, then that will give me a chance of winning that. But, you know, we'll see. I think we need to get some, like, Russian collusion involved. So if anyone knows Vladimir Putin and can swing it for us, then do send me an email. That'd be great. So thanks, everyone, for listening to the Oasis podcast. And a special thanks, as always, to our patrons, Brianna, Ben, Sean, Cindy, Andrew, Simon, Remy, Jim, Richard, Amy, Mark, Dana, Mike, Fraser, Jeff, Davey, Jason, Casey of the Movie Multiverse Podcast, Nick of the Britpop Revival Show, Ryan, Dan, Alex, and the three Davids. You can become a patron and support the show at patreon.com/oasispod. Which is where I post articles by myself and Richard and Kyle. Plus, follow on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, but mainly Twitter, at Oasis Podcast. Email me, oasispod@gmail.com. T-shirts and other merch are available at TeePublic. And please subscribe and review on iTunes or anywhere else where you're able to get podcasts from. As ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.